Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack went his rumpet tail, and the beast was done. He asked us, angels, and we said nay, we are but men. Rock
and here we are, folks, another Sunday night, another bright and glorious Sunday night, actually Monday morning over in Sweden. John, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, actually, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great.
Excellent.
It's hot and humid here. I mean, so humid. While the temperature is like 84, the heat index is like in the upper 90s, almost 100. And you step outside, it's like stepping into a sauna without the rocks steaming at you. And so it's been a couple of those days and just getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Oh, dear. Is it touching just the 100th mark?
Oh, yes.
Is the sun shining on you?
No. As a matter of fact, the sun has gone down, and while it's not as hot, it's just as humid.
Oh, bless your little cotton socks. Well, I'm sure you've got all.
Thank
this
you, Mrs. In. Doubtfire. I like you at 4 a.m, Sweden time.
You know what? It gets me. This week has been. It's been one thing. It's not just this week. It's been the last, couple of months, really. One thing after the other. One thing after the other. One thing after the other. Do you guys over there have nothing other to do than just to whinge? Whinge and whinge. That's what you do.
What are you talking about? What are we whinging about?
Oh, what aren't you whinging about?
Are you talking about me and us in general as the United States? Are you talking about the stupid special interest groups, the politically correct crowd, the progressive liberals, the conservatives? Who are you talking about specifically? Or all of them in one basket?
I think you've just hit the nail on the head.
Let's put there it is.
In the basket. Put them all behind my little wall that I'm going to build around Iraq and Syria, and just put them in there and let them get on with it.
Are the Israelis going to let you connect up with their wall?
I'm not too sure about that, but their war's little. Their war's pretty pathetic, actually, really. It's not like World War Z, is it? It's just a little fence.
That's right. Well, you know, and speaking of whinging, did you see the article about the nude-colored bras are now being called racist as an example of white privilege?
I actually posted it to the Situation Room today.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just ridiculous. It really is. I mean, how far do you want to take this?
And folks, I don't know. You know, I'm assuming many of you are women in our listening audience. And so you, like my wife and John's wife and other people we know, would know what nude color means when you're buying a bra. Now, frankly, I've never bought one other than as a gift to a girlfriend or a wife or somebody. And usually those aren't functional bras. Those are just bras to make guys happy. And, John, I think you've been in that same category. But when you're wearing your day-to-day bra and you go and you look for colors, you'll see one that's called nude. Well, of course, the nude color is like the flesh-colored crayon that Crayola used to have, which was a white flesh color. Now, granted, there's all different shades of flesh, so political correctness has made them change the color of that as well. I get that. Sensitivity. Because, you know, you have black kids and red kids and yellow kids and white kids and pink kids and everything, every shade in between, and flesh. If flesh is the only color is flesh in the crayon box, looks like a white guy, then you're going to confuse kids. Okay, I get that. But now it's gone to bras. And this is an op-ed piece that I saw from the University of Oklahoma, where it says, it starts off.
How are you going to confuse kids with a flesh-colored crayon?
Well, if you say you've got a kid who is of African descent,
then use the brown crayon.
Use the brown crayon. But what if the crayon on the brown says chocolate And the crayon on the that is, you know, the peach colored skin says flesh, and they grab flesh and they color themselves as flesh.
Two words which I wish to string together here.
All right, string them together.
Hard luck.
Well, yeah, there it is.
That's it. That's all I've got to say.
I would just say seriously. That the crayons were obviously made by white guys, but there are colors in there that represent your skin when you get the 64 pack or bigger.
Go and produce your own crayons for your own ethnic, racial...
But see, I can almost understand. If I was today to start the new Scotty John Crayon Company, I would probably have, for you know, one section of the box of 124 crayons would be flesh tones. And in that flesh tone, I might have, you know, white. I might have, or an African or Egyptian even. I might even have Egyptian. Call it out, Egyptian color.
Why would you call him white?
Chinese.
That's white. That's
well,
racist.
White is racist. Well, it's as racist as calling somebody black or somebody yellow or red.
Would it be the biggest crayon in the box?
No, but some might think that it would be the overseer. But that would see now that would be racist. Now see, I can't even joke about that. Somebody out there's going, "Oh, I can't believe you said that." But seriously, if we were to come out with our own box of crayons, I would probably now in this present day and age, not due to political correctness, but due to the fact that we've all recognized certain things. You got to admit, there are some elements of political correctness that started in the right place. Recognizing race, recognizing things like that. I'm not talking about sensitivity and not offending people. I'm talking about just recognizing things. So if we had our box of crayons, the Johnny Scott crayons, Scotty John crayons, they would have a section that would be flesh colors, flesh tones. I would probably say it. And you'd have flesh tones, and we'd put every shade of flesh tone that we can think of. You know, basically break it down to 8 crayons. And that way you can almost not offend anybody. And then on the back of the box, I think we have instructions to teach children how to shade. So that if, say, you are light-skinned black, you could use the Caucasian tone and then use the African tone to do your shading. Do a little rouge on the cheeks, little tan under the chin. Things like that. So I think, you know, there are ways to get around it. But this whole thing of getting back to the nude bra.
Seriously, have you gone from nude bras to flesh tone crayons?
Have you been listening? I have. Or as Robert Hoover in the chat room says, you can't have a white colored crayon. Too many confused, delusional, and emotionally immature people would sue you. And that's, you know, that's pretty much it. Hey, would we have an X rating on our crayons?
I think
have one crayon that says naked.
But then
if you do naked, you're going to run into trouble too. What if it's African naked or Welsh naked or, you know, new Papua New Guinea naked? Those are all going to be different colors of naked.
But what about, I want to know is, why are you now trying to ban the fleur-de-lis?
I'm not trying to ban the fleur-de-lis. Did you see that article, folks? Did you see the article out there?
There is a
woman from, since I don't have the article up in front of me, she was from, she's a college professor somewhere. I think it's the state of Louisiana. And she wrote an article saying now that we should be banning the fleur-de-lis. And now if you don't know what a fleur-de-lis is, you see it a million times a day. If you don't know what the word is, you've seen it a million times a day. Go look up fleur-de-lis. F-L-E-U-R, space, D-E, space, L-I-S, fleur-de-lis. It's a French term. It's the symbol of the old French monarchy. But we have used it in just about everything. I actually look around my office here. I've got a little metal terrarium, void of any flowers, by the way. It's just empty. It's metal with glass around it. And on the top is a kind of a hook that hangs it up on the wall, or you can sit it on a shelf too, but in the ornate design is a huge fleur-de-lis right in the middle. Now, John, you know, because you originally sent me that article, tell everybody what the big to-do is about the fleur-de-lis now.
I have no idea. I posted the article. I read the same article that you're referring to, that this college professor has said that it represents slavery. the days of Louisiana when the French colonists had all the slaves and the fleur-de-lis was used as a branding iron. If your slave broke the law or broke the rules severely enough to be branded, then the fleur-de-lis was used in some kind of bad con. I mean, oh, please. Seriously? It's just gone ridiculous. I mean, at what point are you going to stop? What are you going to do? If somebody has the fleur-de-lis tattoo, are you going to stop them from entering the United States? What happens if they've got the heaven forbid, they've got the Confederate flag tattooed on their thigh or on the bottom of by their ankle, and they're wearing shorts, and they're seen at customs? Are you not going to allow them into the country? You know, this is really starting to become stupid, because what's happened is that these liberal progressive morons, and let's label them as they are, morons, are not looking outside of the box. They don't even think twice about anybody else on the rest of the planet. It's just literally they're in a little bubble in the United States.
Well, yes.
And in fact, they didn't even think about the United States, the states. They're just thinking of the state in which they live in, the little village that they've never left, and that's all they're thinking.
No. Well, I think that they are very myopic in their thinking, but I don't think they're so much thinking about their village as they're thinking about this is what this country should now be. We have seen, and we've mentioned this before, we mentioned it on the Situation Room on Thursday, that our country has now become, ever since the killing of the 9 people in the church by the whack job, who you don't hear much about him anymore these days. I mean, we've kind of gone past that initial slaying of those innocent people in that church in South Carolina, Charleston, to every political correct piece of crap has come up since then. Everything from banning guns, which, by the way, Obama said there's no civilized country in the world other than ours that has things like this that happen. And he's absolutely wrong. I actually saw an article on that listing all the, and I know, John, you can think of some, all the atrocities committed around the world by bad guys with guns.
We even had a shooting in London over the weekend. The shooting in Germany on Friday.
Well, how many people did that guy in Norway kill a couple of years back?
Christ, Anders Breivik, he killed over 70 people. If I'm
he killed over 70 people. Now,
I just want to change. Can I just interject here? Because I know we're up against our time on our show. We always get lost in.
Well, we got 16 minutes till break, so you got a little time.
I'm offended. Seriously, I'm offended. Now, your state, I always love the name of the state, Oregon, because it always reminds me of either Oregon.
That's not my state.
Or the Oreo biscuit. They've actually made it legal now to perform sex change on minors.
That's way off the beaten track of what I was talking about, but I didn't know they had done that.
I was reading an article. I actually posted it to the Situation Room that this at the age of 15, you can have a sex change.
I don't think somebody at the age of 15 is mature enough to be able to make the decision to have a sex change operation. Look, can somebody in the United States drink alcohol before age 15 legally? No. They're 7 years off from being able to drink legally. Can they drive a car legally? In some states, they can get a permit at age 15, but they can't get a license. What else can't they do at 15? There's a hell of a lot of things you can't do at 15 that you can't do before you're 18. You don't even file your own taxes before you're 18 in this country. But you can go have a sex change operation?
It's ludicrous. It really is.
Now, I don't have the article in front of me, so I'm not doing it justice here. I'm ranting on just the notion that, folks, let me ask you out there. Let us ask you. If you have a child who is, and we talked about this a bit on Thursday, and I do want to get somebody to talk about this intelligently with us, because we're definitely one-sided on this. But when you have a child, there was a child in the news who was 8 years old who claimed that his lesbian parents who were saying that he was struggling with his sexuality at age eight, or she, was it a boy or a girl?
It was a boy becoming a girl.
A boy that wants to become a girl. Now, at 8 years old, do you believe that that is something that a parent should allow a child to start pursuing? I mean, I've had 3 8-year-olds. I've got a 6-year-old coming up, and I've got a 3-year-old now, and I got a 7-month-old. But I've got 23-year-olds and a 14-year-old, and I got to tell you, at 8 years old, if any of them had come to me questioning their sexuality, I'd have had a nice talk with them about sex and things like that, and what do you think you know? And I think the first talk I had with my daughters about sex, other than, you know, just trying to introduce the topic so it's in the back of their head as they started going into puberty, was my daughter came to me and said, "Dad, I think I'm starting my period. What do I have to do?" I said, "Let's go get some pads and tampons and see what works the best for you." And we talked about it on the way to the store. We talked about it at a point throughout that day. I said, let's take care of it. And now that you're at that point, I told you this was coming. Let's get it figured out. Now, that's at age 12, 13. Minus 4 to 5 years off of that. And have your sweet little 8-year-old kid who's still growing in their adult teeth, still at times losing some of their baby teeth at age eight, and you think that they are old enough and capable of making a decision or even discussing their sexuality and a choice to become a different sex?
Well, I don't even understand how an 8-year-old comprehends, other than, because let's be crass about this, are we talking about sexual orientation? Or as the morons,
I don't think that's crass.
Say, no, well, as the liberal progressive morons would say, transgender. So is it then a gender problem where they believe they're either a girl or a boy? But is that to do with the genitalia, or is that to do with emotions? So, you know, if they see a romantic movie, do they burst into tears, or? If they see, they want to.
Well, I do that now. I can watch The Lion King and cry.
No, but you see, I don't understand.
I'm a guy.
What is the thing that? What is the catalyst here? Is it a sexual orientation for an 8-year-old, or is it emotional? I'm sorry. I have to say this.
I don't know the ins and outs of that particular situation, but I would dare say, with the politics of the LGBT community that's out there, the heavy politicking that's going on now, the winning of the case, which I'm all for. If gay and lesbian people want to get married. If you love each other, marry them. I'm fine with that. But when you are having parents who are lesbian parents that are pushing this with their child, I got to tell you, a red flag goes up in my head and says, are you pushing this because you believe that child really needs some counseling on this, or needs to talk to somebody and make them wait until they're, or are you pushing this because this is your lifestyle, this LGBT community, this is something that's your lifestyle, and you are going to pursue it because you would have a huge feather in your cap 20 years from now if you say, our son became our daughter, and we helped him do that at age eight. Yeah. You know, is that what that's all about for them? Is it about the feather in the cap for their community? Or again, is this about loving the child? Because I believe, John, if you really love your child, that's an issue that at age eight remains on the back burner until they're old enough to at least go through puberty and start seeing where they're going to head after puberty.
Well, that's it. I mean, again, you come back around to the question. Puberty, is it genitalia or is it emotional? I really don't know. And to be honest with you, if you've got a lesbian couple who have a son that's could be biological to one of them, because it can't be biological to both.
That's right.
So it may, I'm saying may because I don't know the full story, it may have adopted the child.
May have.
Oh my God. No, there's just too many red flags for me. I can't even begin to talk about it because I have hate mail.
There's far too many. Well, you know, you got to expect a little hate mail, you know.
I don't like hate mail. I don't like people to like me. Can I just change the subject again?
Well, you already did. You already took me off my first subject. Now you're not. Okay. Now change. Go ahead. Change again.
I want to bring up the meme that seems to be going through Facebook at the moment of a white guy. Yes. A white guy holding a rifle while kneeling on a small black African child.
And who is apparently dead on the ground underneath his knee.
Yes.
Right.
And it reads that FB is trying to get rid of this picture because they don't want the world to know. This picture was leaked by a member of a private group of Israeli and British businessmen who hunt, or actually, it doesn't even say hunt, it says who haunt African children on the weekend. They are protected by their government and USA government because they are very rich. Please share, please share, please share.
Yes, I've seen that.
If anybody is literally taking this meme seriously, go and see the same counselor that the lesbian had taken their children to. It's seriously. It's time to pack up the bags, close the windows, turn the lights off, and say goodbye. If you think for 1 minute there are white men running around the jungle with their 9mm or whatever it is they've got, their rifles, shooting at little African children, seriously? Seriously? Have we come to the point where we turn on our Facebook to check out the lovely furry kitten pictures and funny videos of people falling over in ice and so forth, and we are confronted by white men kneeling over dead African children and being told that this is a sport being carried out by Israeli and British businessmen.
Okay. Yeah.
But a protected...
What was the source of that meme?
It's just a meme. One of our co-friends, actually, Sai, he was the one who had posted it, and he'd made some comments on it.
He had the Heil Hitler flag or something like that, the Heil Hitler symbol, something like that.
No. This is just being... I put it on the Situation Room last night, and I thought I'd leave it there and see what people actually reacted to it. And there's a few people who have said a few things. Wong has made his usual comments, but other than that, no one's really gone to it, which is good, really, because it's done what I wrote there. I wrote quite a diatribe on it to basically ignore it, and people have, which is great. That's what I like.
Yeah. Well, all I was saying, your original question, what are you whinging about over there in America, you Americans? And I think it's, to me, and I'm going to give once again, folks, this is my take on everything that's going on with all this stuff from Confederate flags to dead generals to bra colors to fleur-de-lis to cakes for gay couples in either Christian or Muslim shops to whatever. You name everything that's been going on in the last month. Number one, I think this is all distractionary. I think it's stuff that is getting us into dialogues like this that are important dialogues to have. By the way, you use a dialogue as a diversion. It doesn't mean that the diversion isn't important. It means it's being thrown up there. It's like a, you know, when it's smoke and mirrors to stuff that's going on. I believe there's a whole lot.
Can I just add to what you just said?
Sure. Before you do, I'm going to say this. My only second point on this is I believe this is a bunch of political correctness run amok, and it is, folks, mark these three words: symbolism over substance. That's what this is all about. Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, do you think it could actually be down to the fact that we, the people, are actually the ones who are actually bringing, kind of not manipulating the news, so to speak, but we're the ones who are perpetuating it? Because we don't want to deal with the real issues that are out there.
Well, you know what I have found, John?
We're, we're putting more emphasis on these
pathetic stories. That could be, but I think America also hides its head in the sand about everything else that's out there. Like I've said many times before, it seems you can read articles or see things or news clips or whatever on what's going on in the Middle East and other parts of the world. Greece, for example. How many people on the streets of America do you think know anything about what's going on in Greece?
Oh, don't talk to me about Greece. Greece in the moment, that's a complete fiasco.
And folks, if you don't know, go look it up. Go look up what's going on in Greece with their financial crisis and
Are you up to date with the latest Eurozone talks that are taking place actually as we speak?
Yes, I've been watching some of that, as a matter of fact.
They're down now. They've rounded it down to a 4-page new bailout option. Now, Greece were looking for somewhere in the region of 50-plus billion euros.
Oh, funny. That's about what I'm looking for.
They're now looking for around about 83 or 84 billion. But the new 4-page document will literally cripple, if not handicap, Greece. But on top of that, it actually stipulates that the EU financial think tank will basically take over Greece's financial institution and law system that pertains to the financial system. So Greece will no longer be sovereign, but will actually be under the jurisdiction and control of the Eurozone. People, regardless of how bad, and I must say this, how bad Greece has dealt with their own debt, and they have been atrociously bad. And I think if you speak to any Greek, they will put their hands in the air and say, yes, we have. We got ourselves into this mess. They're very easy to agree to that. That doesn't negate the problem that they're at this present moment being invaded. And they are being invaded. I call it the paperclip invasion because they're being taken over by outside sources. And if you want to get the conspiratorial boys, will go down the routes of Goldman Sachs and so forth and the rest of the big corporate identities that are backing this. But really, what it truthfully boils down to is just a handful of countries, France and Germany. Germany holds the biggest whip in this story. And frankly, it is quite frightening what is taking place.
It certainly is. And rather than go too deeply into the economics of that, let's take this back.
Who won the bloody war anyway?
Between who?
The Second World War. Fool?
Why, the Allies did.
Oh.
There you go.
You're so American. You see, if you were European, you say, well, the British did, of course.
Well, with America's help, you know.
Well, you not really. You got the
hell bombed out of you over there, and we came in and helped out. And you guys are our allies. But here's what I want to bring up, because we've only got about a minute left until we go out to break. But with all this talk about political correctness, symbolism over substance, everything that's going on, save for when we delved into a bit of a European politics, that's what we're going to be talking about with our guests after the bottom of the hour tonight. It's going to be Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman are joining us talking about their book Mind Wars. And I've got a little blurb on their book in front of me, and you listen to how some of this ties into, and I think this is very important to tying into some of the things I've been talking about what's going on in America today. It's the desire to control the thoughts, the behaviors, and the actions of others. And it's been pervasive throughout history, and it is no different in America right now. And you're listening to me, Scotty Roberts, and Dr. John Ward over there in Sweden.
That be me here with the Smurfs.
That'd be him. And we're going to go out to break. Hey, well spoken. Your Swedish is brushing up. I like that.
It is indeed, isn't it? Did you know that the Norwegian police only fired 2 bullets last year in anger?
You know, folks, we're going out to break. And so we'll be back after these messages. You sit tight, because when we come back, we're going to let John just go loose on that for a few minutes, just so he feels like I want to make sure that he feels very needed.
And we're going to be talking about nude necropants.
And there we go. Stand by. We'll be right back. Hang on.
it's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The fourth annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find any place else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
In a world that has become increasingly aware of the benefits of organic and natural ingredients, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is in the tea business simply for the love of the tea. Utilizing ingredients grown all around the world, blended with all natural organic herbs, fruits, and spices, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is supremely conscious of the benefits of natural ingredients and the health benefits that modern science has proven and tea drinkers have experienced for centuries. Offering a wide variety of natural teas, including black, white,
Pu'er, Oolong, Spiced Wellness, and specially packaged iced tea blends, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is both conscientious and passionate as they strive to provide you with the finest tea and herbs available for the ultimate tea drinking experience. Go to CedarLakeReflections.com to find affordable, high-quality, organic loose-leaf teas and tisanes and celebrate one of life's simple pleasures.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
And what a lovely evening it is here, folks. Boy, I said that so fast, it didn't even sound like the word evening. Welcome back to the Intrepid Paradigm radio program, right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Got John Ward out there. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, actually. I managed to grab a quick ciggy and refilled my
coffee. Oh, how politically incorrect is that?
Well, I didn't do it. I got my slaves to do it.
Well... You have slaves. I know you have servants over there in Egypt.
Do you know what? Well, I was standing out there, and it's a beautiful morning, by the way. The sun's not up, but it's absolutely daylight, basically. And the bees are out there busying away, collecting their honey as they do. And it came to me, I thought, am I getting too old these days and too long?
Well, of course you are.
That I don't care anymore. I've got to the point where... I don't care. There's so much stupidity out there that people are just pandering to.
Hello?
That I really just don't
care. Hey, Larry, hang on there a second.
All right. So it really is just a pointless exercise. I might as well go into the garage and put a 9mm to my head, I think.
Oh, you're so fatalist. You're so damn European. Oh, Scotty... Oh, my coffee is not the right color today. I think I'll go out on deck and slit my wrists or something. I mean, please. I don't have a manservant today.
I must admit, I did speak with Abdullah the other day, and he's doing very well. The house is very well in Luxor. The cats and the dogs are fine, and so everything's tickety-boo.
Well, that's fantastic. Tickety-boo, I love that. That's so damn British.
I'm sorry. You just couldn't get away with saying that.
I probably couldn't. Well, John, since we've already got our guests are here on the line with us now, I'm going to give them a very brief introduction here, and then we'll call them right into the program here. We've got Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman. And guys, as we already told you at the beginning, or I'm sorry, the end of the last segment, we're going to be talking about their book, Mind Wars. And I think that this segues very well into some of the things that we were talking about at the beginning of the program, where you're looking at all the political correctness, what I would call symbolism over substance, and all what I believe to be, and by the way, I am not some right-wing nut job who has got to come off with some conspiracy theory and doomsday scenario, but I do believe that there is something more insidious beneath the things you're seeing in political correctness nowadays, especially in the last month or two. You're seeing a heightened need for the government or whoever to start controlling you. Now, what their book is about is something on a much more deeper level even than that. And they say right here in their summary, since the dawn of humanity, there has been some kind of desire going on to control the masses, to control thoughts, behaviors, actions. You can look at it in religion. You can look at it in all different kinds of things that have been going on. And now, of course, you got the high tech that's thrown into it in these days. And the authors of these books are on with us tonight. Many of you already know who these guys are. And guys, I use that term very, very friendly and non-politically correct. These are our friends, Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman. And Marie, you know both of them, by the way. Marie and Larry both have written several books together that you'll recognize, from The Resonance Key to 1111, The Time Prompt Syndrome. And if I get any of these wrong and one belongs to the other, now both of you, let me know. But the Power of Three, The Trinity Secret, This book is from the future, The Grid, Exploring the Hidden Infrastructure of Reality, Viral Mythology, How the Truth of Ancients Was Encoded and Passed Down Through Legend, Art, and Architecture. All of these things. I have known Marie and Larry for several years, and I've seen every one of their books come out, and they've got this evolution in their writing going on that has taken you from just looking at things and asking questions to digging deeper and going into things about the multiverse and the grid and all of these things that they're writing about now. And I do have to put this in for Marie D. Jones. I really credit Marie with getting me in front of my publisher, New Page Books, with The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim back in 2011. And she introduced me to her publisher, Michael Pye, over at New Page Books, and landed that contract. And it's because of Marie that I have any career with New Page Books at all. And so I have to thank her profusely. So Marie and Larry, both of you, welcome to the Intrepid Radio program.
Hey, it's good to be on. Thank you. Thank you, Scotty. I appreciate that. I really do. And it was your writing. I just opened the door. You went through it.
Well, sometimes you need that person to get you in the door, you know.
Well, I'm glad I did, but thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
I so appreciate that, and you mean a lot to me, too. And Larry, you and I don't see each other enough. We used to talk more than we do now. Life has taken us in such busy directions, so it's great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Scotty. It's been a while.
It has. I was just remembering somebody brought something up about the Arizona. You and I were together at the Arizona, I don't know if it was paranormal or UFO conference of some kind, and it had to be back 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a while. It's been quite a while. And, John, I'm sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
No, that's all right. I don't mind being ignored over here in the corner. Good morning, guys. How are we?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for asking.
Good to hear that.
Excellent.
Well, let's kind of dig right into your book. As I mentioned, you guys have a list of books that would take 10 minutes for me to read off all the titles. Tell everybody the progression that you have gone. Let's dig back into your history a little bit as a team that is writing books together. From that first book you wrote, was 1111 the first, or The Resonance Key the first that you wrote together?
It was 1111.
1111. So where have you seen yourself come from 1111 to Mind Wars? Now, frankly, I know, and I'll throw this in there because we all have to be honest, we're writers and we're always looking for new material in the areas that we are very interested in. And Larry, I know in reading your particular bio, I read something about how you are, I can't remember because I don't have that up in front of me, the investment that you have in wanting to dig into these things to, it's like if you could do this stuff for free, you'd do it for free because it's on a level of interest for you. But you have to always look for good material and a new way to present something. So you've gone from 1111 to this. How do you see yourselves? How do you see your history together? What do you see as the catalyst, that evolutionary process that has brought you from that to this?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. The catalyst, I guess, that kind of has brought us to where we are today is the topics. Everything that we've written about have been topics that have been of significant interest to both Marie and I. And it seems like that's translated well into books that our audiences enjoy as well. So just the topics that we're interested in, whether it's science, paranormal, psychology, whatever, seem to have a kind of a universal interest level that is fairly, I guess, easy to predict just based on our own personal interest levels. So I think going forward, our direction, I think that we're moving is probably very similar to where it has been the last 6 or 7 years. It's kind of an evolutionary thing. We've gone from a topic that neither one of us knew very much about, something that was wholly unfamiliar to us, to something that we're actually enjoying. Not that 1111 wasn't enjoyable to write, but it was a little, I think, outside of our comfort level to begin with. But to now more writing things that we're interested in, things that we have our own passions about.
Yeah, one thing too is that I think for both of us, it's been a real frustration too with the paranormal field, which is kind of where we were focused, and feeling like maybe we tapped it out a little. We've written a number of books that we think put out some pretty good ideas. But I think our general frustration with the field is sort of helping us look at the broader picture. I don't know, Larry, would you agree with that? It's subjects we, you know, that are not paranormal. Certainly this book isn't. And our next book is totally out there in left field. But
Give us a quick clue, can you? Can you tell us anything about what you're writing on next? Just a topic.
I'm actually, the next thing is fiction, and it is called Gridwalkers, and there's already some heavy duty TV series interest in it, which I need to talk to you about, Larry. But
announcement, Larry.
Well, not too specific, but it's a chance for us to take what we wrote about in the grid and the resonance key and fictionalize it and expand on it and do some things that, you know, you can't really do in nonfiction. And right now, reality-based or science-based science fiction, realistic science fiction, is so hot that we have just an incredible opportunity with this. And so that's next. It's really difficult. We're trying to, I think, still figure out how the heck we're going to write a novel together. It's different than, hey, you take chapter 8, you know, you go research surveillance and I'll go research cults. And it's a completely different thing.
I'm sure it's not as easy as saying, okay, Marie, you do the guy character stuff and Larry, you do the girl character stuff.
I think we're still kind of figuring out what we're going to do, but we need to do it quick. So, but that's exciting. And I think something like that
sounds exciting.
Opens the door for a way to, you know, to talk about the same kind of material that are in all our books, but in a different arena.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very cool. I'm really excited about that.
But isn't that the beauty of how both of you have evolved, primarily in your writing styles? As Scotty was saying, as alluded to, you know, you've published all these fantastic books, and now you're working, you're stepping into a totally different genre, which again just pushes the boundaries of your professional relationship, which I think is fantastic. And that's
we wrote a screenplay together, and that actually I thought was the easiest of the three. I may be wrong. I mean, Larry, you may have a different opinion, but this is different. So I think we're still kind of figuring out, okay, we need to get this ball rolling, and how do we do that best?
Well, of course, because when you're writing nonfiction, that can be, and don't slap me for saying this, that can be a heck of a lot easier than writing fiction, because when you're writing nonfiction,
right,
You've got to be appealing. You've got to grab the audience and give them meat so you keep them turning the pages. But when you're writing fiction, it's not just, you know, Jane and Bill ran up the hill and
scary. You guys know. Yeah. But the thing is that, like, with our nonfiction, it was easy for Larry and I to figure out the rhythm or the technique where, okay, you can work on these chapters, I'll work on these, then we'll trade, add what we want to those. And then in the end, we would always each go through the whole manuscript. And it comes out pretty seamless. But this is a little different, and it's a little more challenging. But it's an opportunity that could lead to, you know, unbelievably huge things. And I always feel like we have all these books that would make great TV series or great motion pictures or what have you. Why not take advantage of the body of work that we already have and have some fun with it?
Well, what a great foundation, though, because, you know, most people who want to write a novel about something, it's usually based on the things they know.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Larry's really good at coming up with cool ideas, and, you know, we probably could take this in a whole different direction if we wanted to. We'll see. the TV thing is really exciting. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So I can't say a whole lot, but it's over the last week or so, a lot of things happened. And, but I don't know that we want to abandon, you know, the nonfiction. I think we still want to get out there. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I totally can see at least myself shifting more out of the paranormal, though. I wouldn't say that my time in the field is done, but, you know, logistically, you can only beat your head against the wall so long before you get a bloody
boy, and ain't that the truth?
There are more questions in my mind than answers when it comes to attempting to explain the paranormal. For every explanation, there's 10 different questions to me that come out of it. So it's very frustrating to me, writing about the paranormal and even researching the paranormal to a certain extent. There's not a lot of serious folks that are out there that are actually researching it. Yeah, there's thousands.
I was going to say that, Larry.
Paranormal groups out there, but
it's weird.
Realistically, there's not. I don't even want to put any numbers out there, but I would say that maybe 3/4 of those are not what I would consider to be scientific in nature. So there's really no new research that's being conducted in the field. To my knowledge, everything is basically at this point being kind of a rehash of what has occurred for the last 140 years, basically, since the advent of the spiritualist movement. Now, of course, we have some new technology and gadgets and toys, but the investigative methodology is exactly the same, and we are no closer today than we were 140 years ago to explaining what happens after we shuffle off this mortal coil. So I'm so frustrated right now with the paranormal field. And then besides that, you've got all the drama and all the BS that occurs in the field that I'm almost to the point of washing my hands of it and just focusing on specific topics within the paranormal that I'm interested in. When I say paranormal, washing my hands of it, I'm talking the ghost aspect of it.
Yeah.
There are many other things in the paranormal that I think could legitimately use our help and our research, but the field of ghost research or ghost hunting. It's very frustrating.
Just say it, Larry. Just say it.
You know, you're talking the same way that John and I have talked, and I just had a conversation on somebody's radio show this afternoon, and we were talking about this very thing, and I've said it for a couple of years. It seems to me that the paranormal community, no offense to my friends who are part of it, but look at why you're part of it if you're in it. The paranormal community has become almost a caricature of itself. It's cannibalistic. It is vying for the spotlight.
The TV show is
all about
to get on TV, and that has been very frustrating. Yeah, sure, we'd all love to get on TV and get rich and famous, wouldn't we? But it's not. I don't know. I guess you have to be very honest about why you're doing this, and
That's exactly my. I have never been shy about my reasons for being involved in the field of paranormal. I have been 100% candid and open about my involvement. And I'll say it again, as I've said on hundreds of other radio shows, I am in this field solely for myself. I am 100% focused on finding answers that satisfy myself. Now, as a side result of that, it's great that I can educate the public and make them aware of the research that we've conducted and the things that we've done, but I want to know for myself. That's why I got involved in this field. I want to know what happens when we die. Have all the people that I've screwed over in this life, all of the bad things that I've done, do I get a second chance to make those things right? So I think, like Marie said, you have to be honest with yourself about what your motivation for being involved in the field is. And there are many, 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 many people I would say that are involved in the field for less altruistic purposes and that are not honest about what their motivations are. Sure, they'll tell you that they're interested in the greater good and trying to research and increase our humanity's body of knowledge, but those are the first people that will run off and stab you in the back the minute they have a potential TV show contract.
Right.
or
yeah,
something
else. Yeah, and I think that happens in ufology, and also I think in the field of ancient knowledge as well. I think it's happening because when Larry and I talk about the paranormal, we've always felt that it embodied all of this stuff. Although most people will say just ghost hunting. But, I mean, I think, you know, you guys probably see it in the fields that you're focusing on, too, that there's the serious people. And just because you're serious doesn't mean you don't want to get the attention. Of course you do. But that there are individuals that take the spotlight away for their own ego from the serious work that's being done. And it hampers that serious work.
Do you think it's because there isn't actually any serious work being done?
Oh, gosh, please don't say that, because I thought we were doing something.
No. What I mean by that, Marie and Larry,
I know. As you know,
I'm an active teacher at the College of Psychic Studies in London.
Yeah, one of you're the doing oldest, some serious one, stuff, dude.
one of the oldest institutions
right.
in the Western world. And they are still carrying out cutting-edge experimentation
I
there.
I don't know what the deal is. Yeah, that's sad to hear.
What you don't see is you do not see this cutting edge experimentation within spiritualism, paranormal, supernatural, shall we call it. Let's throw all the labels on the table there. You just don't see that happening in the main arena.
No, I think it's happening quietly, maybe under the radar.
It has.
It is. I mean, I'm participating. Participating in it.
Right.
I'm in it. So I know it's taking place. It's just that it's not publicized, and it's not publicized for one reason only. And that is exactly what you were just both of you were pertaining to. And that is that the circus act that is out there is, to use Scotty's word, cannibalistic. It's tearing itself apart from the inside.
So people are trying to avoid even putting the work out there to be torn to pieces. Is that what you're saying?
Well, basically that, and also the fact that the majority of the people out there, unfortunately, are, as Larry quite rightly says, you know, they're in it for alternative reasons other than the actual research itself, the actual investigation. Right. They're in it for other altruistic reasons and agendas which they wish to fulfill. And, of course, with that, you never will achieve the results which will stand up to scrutiny, because you're running around trying to pretend to do something that you're incapable of actually doing.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Well, and I think you guys are missing another very key piece of the puzzle here. The research has been done at a very legitimate level. If you look at Princeton University, for instance, with the PEAR lab back in the 70s and 80s, there has been legitimate research that's been done. But now there are two things that come to mind as far as reasons why this is not high priority or this is not a primary focus of higher education. One is that there is a significant lack of funding for any of those types of research endeavors. There is just no funding. National Science Foundation, some of the other larger organizations that grant fund and grant money do not grant those for these types of topics. They have to be traditional hard science topics to earn any kind of a grant. And obviously without grant money, without money, you can't conduct the studies. So there's certainly the financial aspect of this, but also I'm not certain why this has become such a stigma, but if most of the folks that I know that are in higher education that have an interest in the quote paranormal are not very prone to speak about that because of the fact that they label it professional suicide. If you ever come out in public and state that you are interested or that you're a paranormal investigator, that you have an interest in extraterrestrial civilization or alternative.
Well, that's a death knell.
Ideas. Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. So
you're speaking to the converted there, Larry.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, those are two big factors, I think, that are going.
But can I just pick up
Before you do, John, let's put a death knell to this segment. We are running over on break. Larry, keep your thought. John, keep your thought. Marie, keep your thought. Folks, you're listening to Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman. We're talking about their new book, Mind Control, which we haven't really even gotten to yet, but we will after this, the top of the hour here. You stay tuned. We're going to go out to break. You're listening to the Intrepid Radio Program with me, Scotty Roberts, and my cohort, Dr. John Ward.
That's me over here, sounding very sexy as per usual.
In Sweden, nonetheless, surrounded by blonde hair and blue eyes. And we're right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. We'll be back right after this, so you sit tight, stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
Thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle. Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
The fourth annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to ScottAllenRoberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disney World.
I listen to Intrepid with Dr. John Ward and Scotty, transmitting meeting crossed all nations. Talk radio with pure intelligence. Broadcasting to you live each Sunday from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern on Intrepid Paradigm Radio. Hapu, bless you, John and Scotty.
You are listening to the Intrepid Paradigm Radio Network in association with EBN, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Hudson, Wisconsin.
Live in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
You know, I like where he says intelligent talk at the end. And John, some days you and I are challenged with that, so it's a good thing we have Larry and Marie here with
you.
Us.
Are challenged. You're probably challenged with that.
I'm but challenged.
Myself, I just, when I have nothing intelligent to say, I usually be very quiet.
You know, when you don't have anything intelligent to say, you just talk and you let the accent kind of carry you. You're kind of like, oh, Scotty.
Oh. You sound like an old married couple.
So, yeah.
Larry, can I just pick up on what you said before we went out to break about funding? Funding is one of those, it's one of those areas at the moment, especially within academia, that is a very contentious issue because there isn't any funding. You're quite right. But there's no funding across the board for any of the sciences. Even ourselves at Silsila, at Gebel Silsila, we're facing humongous problems trying to find funding. There just isn't the funding out there. But when it comes to the spiritualist movement, it's always been self-funded. And this raises the question as to why that funding has dried up in certain circles. Again, I refer to the College of Psychic Studies and say even the SPR still. But these two organizations are still very much at the forehead, at the spearhead of conducting experimentation in the spiritualist movement, and are still self-funded. And so it does actually go out there and does actually prove that the funding is still there to be had when it is directed in a more, shall I say, intelligent way, rather than running around with a night vision goggles and glow sticks. And
what's wrong with that?
Well, nothing, seriously. Scotty, if you're in a rave.
I like it. Well said, Larry. Well said.
Larry, don't give him fodder. Just, you know, yeah.
But no, it is, and it is a problem. You are right. You are right, Larry. But I do believe that it's self-inflicted.
Oh, absolutely. Self-inflicted. You know, the field of the paranormal is its own worst enemy. Absolutely, it's self-inflicted. If there wasn't so much infighting and backstabbing and bullshit,
oh man,
it would probably be
taken. Did you just say the BS word?
He did. Don't be so shocked.
You know, there are a lot of places to look. There are private organizations, philanthropists. There are organizations and places that you can apply for grants. The money is out there. You just have to have a monetizable purpose too. Obviously, if an organization wants to fund you, they want to see that there's going to be some type of a return on their investment. And the field of the paranormal offers no such thing. You can't put a price tag on discovering the secrets of death. I mean, certainly that increases humanity's knowledge, but you can't put a price on it. You can't sell it at Walmart. You can't charge people for that kind of thing. So I think organizations are a lot less likely to want to pour money into something where they
again, you've just hit upon one of the major nails in the coffin of the private spiritualist movement, and that is a return on one's investment.
Right.
There never was a return on the investment. The return on the investment is purely academic. It's
absolutely.
It's self-fulfilling on one's quest. As you started off the very conversation by saying, Larry, you're in it for yourself to answer
right.
your questions.
Yep.
You're not in it to have a financial gain, so to speak. The financial
no.
gain is to put bread and milk on the table. But when it actually comes down to these institutions, the gain is to keep the institution going and to keep the investigation and the research going at a level that is credible. And that is the problem. Another thing that comes to my mind is the amount of these egotistical guru morons that are out there. If they're earning so much more, if they're earning so much money, why don't they put it in themselves? Why
right.
don't they start up their own institutions? Why?
Good
because
idea.
They're,
Good
it's because the ego gets in the way.
That's, yeah,
they don't want
they're
to,
not in it for
yep.
that reason. Right. Absolutely.
Exactly. Well said, Maria. They're not in it for that reason. They're in it for their own selfish needs. They're not in it to perpetuate the research any further. Which leads me, if I may say so, Scotty,
yes.
as a good segue here, into your wonderful new book.
Yes. You know, I actually had a question that was forming about this, John, unless you've got something forming in your mind.
No, if you have something intelligent to say, please feel free to say it now.
Gosh, I will reach real deep, John, and see what I can come up with.
I didn't realize this was a comedy show.
I didn't either.
Let me see if I know any jokes.
Yeah, see what you can work up.
Knock, who's there?
You know, you think by now I'd have all the slams in place for John when he does that to me. But,
that's a nice dynamic to have.
I'm just such a much nicer man. So, oh, well, you know, some people would think that's not an insult, John.
Oh, please.
You are so non-politically correct.
You know what, Scotty? When you have an accent of any kind, you can get away with a lot more. Have you noticed that?
That's very true.
Yeah.
You know,
people
look at John.
People are so charmed by it that they don't even realize they're being slapped upside the head with an insult.
I say you strip John of his accent and his umbrella, and you got nothing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You got your... Your typical dime a dozen scholar. So.
Meow.
Meow.
Put your handbag away.
Anyway, what I did want to get to with this on mind control, we haven't really even sunk into your book yet here. There's something about this that I wonder with Larry and John, when you two were talking especially about the financial and about the state of the field and so on, writing a book about mind control and is there mind control experimentation that's going on? Is there when I look at the paranormal right now, I was part of a group that was invited to a big event which will remain unnamed, and it was a big event a couple of years ago, 3 years ago I think now, and we were all told months afterwards, well, that was a mind control event. And
what?
you were all being mind controlled.
I know which one you're referring to.
Yes, yes. And there's a few people out there who were there with me. Micah Hanks was actually there with me. Or I was there with him, whichever way you want to look at it. But when you start looking at this stuff and you say there are people that have certain agendas that they want to reach, and then people who are, it's almost like the... what would you call it? The court of Louis the 16th and the commoners with the guillotine. They're all out there. You got this dichotomy that is set there. Those who are successful and making something of it, than those who want to be that, and so that creates this financial dichotomy, which we see in the nation. Which then we start to say, how much of what we see going on with political correctness? I am getting somewhere with this. With political correctness, what we talked about in the first half, are the symbolism over substance, And all the stuff in politics that we're seeing going on right now that in a way could be diversionary from real things that should be talked about. And how much of this do you fit under the category of mind control, be it from the paranormal field on a very small scale to a governmental field? Now, when we're talking mind control, are you guys strictly talking governments that are trying to control us or religions that are trying to control us? Who is doing this? And what's
Everybody and anybody. It's personal relationships, it's cults, it's politics, it's religion, it's the media, advertisers, corporations. This is a part of human life, the desire to control the thoughts and behaviors and actions of other people, you know, for your own motives. I mean, it's something that we deal with in interpersonal relationships, but we also have it put upon us by, you know, all of those things I just listed and probably more. And even I think, you know, I mean, I don't know how much mind control is going on in the paranormal field, but I think that certainly a lot of fraud is. And if you about it, fraud is a way.
Fraud is a mind control. Yeah.
It is a mind control technique because you are manipulating events and situations to create a particular outcome. So, yeah, it's out there and it's definitely happening.
You know, I was in advertising for 20 plus years. I was in as a creative director, an art director, and what we had to sit down and do was figure out how do I get people to buy Goldfish crackers when they would prefer to buy Ritz crackers or whatever it might be. So there was certain mind control that you had to, on a much lighter scale, mind you, when you're just trying to convince somebody that they need something that they don't need. There's a certain, I know people that get burned out in advertising or say I've spent too many years trying to force people who don't want to buy something and prove to them that they need to have it in their pocket.
Sure. Absolutely. Fear is a good way of doing that. So is sex. And you know, but I don't think it's as innocent as we think. I think that because we're so distracted and we're so busy, I think most of us are really not aware of the thoughts that we are thinking 90% of the time. And I think that we can be swayed so easily into doing certain things, believing certain things, behaving in certain ways, certainly towards other people. So I see it as the beginning of something a little bit more sinister. Now, if you've got advertisers just trying to sell you, you know, this donut over that donut, fine. But those same techniques are going to be used later on to try to get you to accept something that goes against your ethics, your morals, your values. So it's kind of a rabbit hole, and you go down as deep as you want. But the techniques and methods used are the same across the board.
But isn't there two sides to this coin, that the ethics behind mind control or manipulation of one's behavior en masse, be that the population of a certain country, for instance, is a necessity for bringing about status quo and an equilibrium within a country itself?
I guess it depends on who's doing the controlling.
Who's doing the control, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if you have you have total anarchy and everybody's killing each other, yeah, you might want to use some of these techniques to sort of scare people into knocking off their bad behavior. But and certainly, you know, there are positive things that you can do with mind control, such as control your own thoughts and behaviors and get over bad habits and quit smoking and lose weight and all those kinds of things. But I think
you're speaking about you there, Scotty.
Quitting smoking?
Smoking?
About quitting smoking? Yeah, yeah.
I think it depends on who's doing the controlling and what their motive is.
Hmm. I just think that it's part and parcel of the I don't want to use the word agenda, but agenda seems to fit the that
it does, yeah. There. It certainly does.
There are certain aspects to our society which needs to have behavioral control over, and our governments or our government institutions, because it's never the president, it's never the prime minister that is aware of the things. It's the institutions that can that run separately from the political institution itself, the mainstay institutions that run our governments. They have to have these instruments to allow the country to function to a certain or lesser
Right.
But one thing, yes.
At some point, though, who is deciding what that status quo is? And that's where you get into the danger zone. I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. But
does it matter?
It's a little slippery when the status quo is being forced to behave in a certain way for the benefit of a certain group, instead of just keeping the peace and making society run. You know what I'm saying? There is that weird fine line, and
there is a fine line.
But you have to remember, John comes from a "God Save the Queen" type of approach.
But he asks
a valid question. Does it matter if it's the Queen or the Parliament or the President or the Senate?
I think there's a point where the public do not have a right to know. And I've said this before on certain topics when we've discussed it here, both on the Intrepid Radio and on the Situation Room. I think there are certain dynamics within our society where we do not have the right to know. It's not our place, and I think that's very interesting these days. Everybody thinks they've got the God-given right to know everything.
We want total transparency.
That's not the case. It's not the case by any shake of the stick.
That's our government's perspective that you have. That's different from maybe what you know. A lot of the people in this country that have such a limited perspective and feel like they're being oppressed instead of being kept in line for a beneficial reason. You know what I mean? It's like you have that other perspective from where you come from.
Well, I feel that you're in places
like Egypt, and you're seeing things happening there that we don't deal with here. And
I think it's always been the case that, you know, there's always been, to use that. Very worn out language, Big Brother.
Yeah.
There has always been the Big Brother.
Right. And but think about it, John. There's always been parents. I mean, don't parents in a certain way have to kind of mind control and manipulate the behaviors of their children?
Of course.
For their benefit, you know? So, maybe that same idea can work there. I have to use
mind control and manipulation with Scotty every day.
You know,
otherwise
John
goes off at a tangent.
John can kill you with his thoughts.
I tried on Larry, but it doesn't work very good.
You're not using the right frequency.
When I wake up in the morning and I go, yes, must kill the masses. Yes.
I have to
shake myself and say, wait, that's John mind control. Let me ask you guys something, and this is presupposing that our government is using mind control on a much different level, a technical level, a satellite level, a drone level, things like that. But
right.
Thomas Jefferson once said, liberty too must be limited in order to be possessed. And that rankles some people, because it is true. There are restraints we have to put on our liberty in order to possess it, because we are not a chaotic society. We're not supposed to be. So the question is, by having security that we want to have in place, by having political correctness, progressive political correctness, if you will, the things that would govern the way we think, the flags we fly, the symbols we use, the words we choose in public interaction and intercourse, with all these things, when we choose to have those restraints put on us, are we giving up our freedom by having this kind of security?
I'll let Larry take this because he's got a lot to say about this, you know, the idea of being under surveillance and all that. But I just really quickly want to say that I think that everything you just mentioned is nothing but surface distractions. If you keep people arguing over a flag, they're not going to notice what you're doing, what they're
very
doing
true
in the corner. I, for one, know now, I'm so aware now after we wrote this book, to look away from the distractions. So, but Larry can talk to, you know, to the
all right
idea of how much surveillance we're under and whether or not that is something that we have to just accept or, you know.
All right. Is everyone wearing their tinfoil hats?
I've had mine on the whole night, so.
Okay. I've been wearing tinfoil pants since the beginning of the show.
Okay. All right. Good. I've got my hat and my tinfoil underwear on, so we can proceed. All right.
Fantastic.
So, it's going to make you impotent, Larry.
Uh-oh.
What?
No more kids for you.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So, surveillance, mind control. It is such an ingrained part of our culture today. It has become such an ingrained part of our culture today. Basically, since the advent of 9/11, the passing of a variety of acts, primarily the
Patriot Act.
Yeah, the Patriot Act. Our liberties, our civil liberties, and our privacy is not what it once was, and it never will be again, more than likely. Despite your political beliefs and whatever your party affiliations may lie, our need for security, our need for the ability to maintain decorum in our society, I think has gotten to the point now where we will never go back to where we were. There is
no.
A constant level of surveillance that is all around us. Every one of us is completely under the influence of this. Whether you go to the local shopping mall and you're bombarded with cameras and any other variety of detection devices.
I was standing at the gas station earlier today, and nobody was at the counter. And I stood there, and I looked up, and there's four TV screens.
Yeah.
And I'm watching myself on the TV screen, and I waved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it has become such a part of our society today that I don't think that we ever will be able to go back to where we were. Secure under the auspices of national security, there is a variety of things that have been put into place, again, all under the name of national security, that allow the government to maintain very tight rein over the populace. And those things are not going away. Our use of technology for surveillance has exponentially increased. Again, as I said, go to your local Walmart, go to a shopping center, and you will see perfect examples of this. In fact, today, every one of us, actually, regardless of your thought of surveillance or your attempt to remove yourself from that, every one of us basically carries our own personal little surveillance device around with us.
Oh, yeah.
Want to or not, which is your cell phone. And we can certainly talk in depth about the capabilities of what your cell phone can and can't do. But yeah, it is such a part, Scotty. It is such a part of our culture now that I think to a certain extent we have accepted the fact that we've had to give up some of our rights and our abilities in the interest of the greater good, or the ability to protect ourselves from further actions like 9/11.
Even from everyday crime, right? I mean, Scotty
sure.
goes to the gas station. That camera could be looking out for, what do you call those guys that put those things on top of the ATM?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
It's like, yeah, we hate it, but at the same time, there are some benefits to it. And again, it's like, where do you draw the line?
But Larry is absolutely right. Once it seems, especially in this nation, that you impose that kind of liberty-restricting security,
right.
that you don't gain that back ever. It
right.
just doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Do you think the...
Have we not brought ourselves to this point, though?
Yes.
If it wasn't for our actions, our governments wouldn't have to use such drastic measures.
Oh, see, but that's spoken like a true monarchist. you know, if the people just didn't act this way, the queen and the king would certainly not have to impose the law.
It's true.
One might also argue that the precursor to all of this, which again was primarily 9/11, one might argue that that really had nothing to do with with where we are today. There are many folks, again, mostly tinfoil hat wearing individuals, that believe that government surveillance and mind control has been occurring for many, many years prior to 9/11. So 9/11, in some people's eyes, was simply kind of a catalyzing event to allow a lot of this stuff to come out in the public. But, you know, some people truly believe that we have been under control and being surveilled since the 1940s to the 1950s. So it really depends on who you talk to.
Well, with satellites and satellite surveillance, certainly, and
well, I would go back to the governmental surveillance via secret organizations.
Oh,
be
sure.
That military.
That was the more crude way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can go back. You can go back throughout the centuries.
Sure.
And you can see how we've been surveyed. I think we've come to a point in our own society where we have the people, and this is where it's very important to have a grasp on this. The people have the means for destruction, and to safeguard the people against themselves,
right.
Our governments have the 100% have the right to conduct as much surveillance into our private homes and private lives as they deem fit, so
sure.
that the masses can be safe.
In the case of America, as the people deem fit to grant them.
Well, no, because you're not granting them anything. They're taking.
Oh,
sure
you are.
We've got satellites.
Sure you are.
Right. Well, that's the problem. I'm talking in theory. I'm talking idealistically. We are supposed to be in America. The government works
for
us, not the other way around, as we know.
Idealism out the window, though.
Right.
You know,
it's cliche.
I agree with John partially because I feel like I am more afraid. You know, where we all talk about the paranormal, I'm more afraid of my fellow human beings and what they're capable of doing.
Right.
And you know, domestic, foreign, doesn't matter. People go crazy. People are cruel and vicious and evil. But again, it all comes down to finding that line between what we need and what we want, which is to feel like we're free and that we have some privacy and that nobody's looking through the walls and I can think my own thoughts, but also that I can go out in the street, you know, with my kid to the grocery store and not have it be blown up by some nut job, or it's that fine line again. And I think we've been so scared as a populace that we've allowed more and more of our civil liberties to be taken away to make us feel less afraid.
Do you think they've really been taken away?
Absolutely, they've been taken away.
Oh,
sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there is very little that you can do as a citizen
to prevent
these things.
It is a big report by somebody, yeah.
Yeah, you can't opt out. Like, you can purposely choose to stay off of Facebook. And you can purposely choose not to use the internet if you're an idiot. But there are certain things that you have no control over that the government... For instance, taxes. We have to pay taxes. We have no choice over that. It's just like death.
Yeah, but you have to pay. You have to pay taxes. If you didn't pay taxes, your country wouldn't function.
Absolutely,
your country wouldn't function without them.
That
is
absolutely
true. That's not. That doesn't really come under civil liberties.
Yeah, so they have to place surveillance on your income.
Absolutely,
they
do.
So they should. And so they should.
We don't have. My point, though, is that we don't have a choice in many of the things that we do as citizens. There are things that we have just come to accept, like paying taxes, that we accept it unquestionably because it is for the greater good. We recognize that that money is being used for larger projects and things that are outside of our scope, but that it's being utilized for a purpose.
But what surveillance, about the corporations that have us under surveillance, Larry? I mean, to me, that's almost more sinister to know that there are people tracking my every move to try
absolutely.
To figure out what it is I eat, what kind of underwear,
that
is like, come on.
But you have a choice about that.
Yeah.
Most of that, you have a choice. Now, you could avoid Walmart. You could avoid going to your local grocery stores. You could avoid society as a whole and live in the mountains someplace.
It is a choice.
I was going to ask you a little earlier, how does one go off the grid?
Yeah, as a writer, I can't. I can't be off the internet or, you know. So it's like we have to constantly make these choices.
So, wait a minute. Choices. I think that's a key word here. We have become so reliant upon technology today.
Yeah, I agree.
We have absolutely forgotten our roots. Can you imagine? Do you remember what it was like before you had a cell phone? I do. Do you remember what it was like before you had a computer where you only – I remember typing classes.
Yeah, I remember my old typewriter. I used to have to write
But big now, as Murray, as writers, could you imagine actually writing a novel or writing one of our books on a typewriter, making edits and mailing it
Larry,
in?
We wouldn't, because we wouldn't have met, because we met online.
Absolutely.
You would have had to, like, written me a letter or vice versa. I mean, I do see the benefits of technology, but I totally agree.
We are slaves to the technology. My point, though, is that we have become enslaved to the technology.
Absolutely slaves to it.
The technology is such an integral part of our life. It's woven into the very fabric of society today.
And that's where they know to hit us.
Absolutely. Our entire lives are based on technology. Your smartphone that you carry in your pocket has your contacts, your calendar, your purchasing habits, your emails, your communications.
And you can now use it to flash to pay things with, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Yeah. You can deposit checks. Take a picture of a check, it goes in your account. You don't even have to go in the bank anymore.
Yeah.
But as much I do agree with you 100%, I'm not going to disagree with you, but there are alternatives. For instance, no one's rang me since I left Egypt, so I don't even have
Well, you never turn your phone on.
Well, no, because I don't want people to speak to me. I don't like speaking to people.
John took me to task the other day. He says, why didn't you just send me a text message? I said, I did. And he goes, oh, my phone isn't on.
I don't like talking to people.
I think it just depends on your lifestyle. I have to have my phone on all the time. I have, you know, important people that need to, my manager or agent needs something, I need to know.
Here's something to think about, too. We're all fairly close in age. Our demographic is really kind of, we've come onto the tail end of technology. Kids nowadays, the teenagers and the youngsters nowadays, technology is such a part of their culture that they don't remember what a 45 record was like.
They don't even know what a 45 record was.
No, absolutely not. They don't even know.
But then again, guys, we don't know what a gramophone is either.
Exactly.
Do you know what it's like to ride a horse and cart?
Yes.
No, seriously. You know what it's like to ride a horse and cart?
Every generational change, though.
Right.
As of today, you know, when I was a kid, we had certain things that my parents never could have imagined, the luxuries that we had.
Well, remember the jokes about handing your grandparents the remote to the television set that were out 20 years ago. You know, and that was like they had no idea. And we were talking 20 years ago about saying how that. There's a paradigm,
I've got
I think.
Very, very funny anecdote on that.
Uh-oh.
Our neighbor here, he has a phone, the old Nokia push button. You know, it's not an Android, it's no swipey screen, it's just a very, very basic Nokia. And his grandson came up and he sat there in front of the television and he looked at the phone, picked it up and started pointing it at the television.
He thought it was
nice.
A remote.
He thought it was remote control because it's an old push-button mobile phone with a screen. And so there's the perception.
Yeah.
As funny as it is, there is also something very sad about that, that a child, a young child, and I think he's only about 4 or 5, he's not even reached the age yet where he can choose whether he wants to be a transgender at the age of 8.
There was an article from the first segment. You guys missed out on that one.
I was going to say, boy, that came out of left field.
But, you know, pointing a phone at a television set, thinking that it's the remote control, that to me is a complete microcosm of what we're talking about.
John, you have a daughter. Your mind will be blown by the time she's 8 years old at what she'll be facing. I mean, Larry and I have kids. My son is 14. He is tech brilliant. You know, he's creating video games and movies and animation and stuff. He's done that since he was 2. Larry's daughter, I'm sure, is incredibly tech savvy. I can't imagine what the next group of kids is dealing with.
And the amount of information that we have today. There's something called Moore's Law. Are you guys familiar with Moore's Law?
Yes, vaguely.
Okay. All right. Well, Moore's Law basically states that for every X number of years, technology increased. It was originally. Okay, well, it was Gordon Moore, I think, was the guy's name from Intel. Basically says every number of years, technology increases a certain amount. So imagine the amount of information that we have in society today and the things that the government has their little paws connected to. So information is and data is such an integral part of our lives today. I can't even imagine in 10 years from now where we will be.
Well, look where we were 10 years ago.
I know. It's insane.
Absolutely. So,
but it's exponentially increasing, though.
Yes.
So imagine in a number of years the amount of data that the government will have access to about our lives. I would hasten to throw a statistic out there that using surveillance techniques and technologies, I would say the government could have access to probably 90% of your life today.
Well, look at
10 years from now, I mean, you're talking complete saturation. The government basically knows what you're going to do before you know what you're
going to do. Or tells you what you're going to do, like Minority Report kind of thing.
and so they should to a certain extent.
And you know what I wanted to say too, and not to just blow past your point there, John, but when I was compiling a family tree, and I go back one generation to my father, back to his birth in 1938, and there are no records of his father other than his signature and his name and his birth date and birthplace on a birth certificate. And that was the only information I had to trace to my paternal grandfather.
Seriously?
Who only lived till he was 21 years old. Died in 1938.
Seriously.
And all there was about him was his birth date. And I was able to find his death and birth certificate based on that.
Publicly recorded, yeah.
But look at it now.
I can go back to the 15th century with my father.
Well, I can go all the way back. I can go all the way back to the 16th century in my family tree. But I can't find any more information on this 21-year-old paternal grandfather other than his birth and death certificate. He was a simple man, didn't have much. He died in 1938. The point I'm making, and that was all handwritten.
Right.
Everything was handwritten. And the generation before him, I mean, Just think of how simplistic it was back then. So you've got now, and I'm speaking, Larry, to this exponential growth and expansion of technology. And some would tell you, oh, it's 1947. That was Roswell, wasn't it? When we got the transistor from back reverse engineering alien craft. You know, that's one side of the story. And the other is that once you start creating this technology, once you know what you're doing, look at microchips. Microchips went from their inception to where they are now. How infinitesimally small, if I mispronounce that, how small they are compared to where they were.
You guys, we know what the past was like in a sense, but our children, Scotty, you've got a little one. They're not going to know any different. They're going to know one past that for them that they've existed in. Us guys, we were there when there were no cell phones, when there were typewriters, when you had to go to the library to do research.
I had a rotary phone growing up.
You know, when you had to order pizza over the telephone using the yellow pages.
Yep.
We remember going outside to play every night when we got home from school until until the nuclear siren went off every night. I mean, we remember that stuff because I think we're fortunate that we have feet in both worlds, but our kids, they only know one way of living. So to them, we're going to be the ones going, oh, wow. And to them, it's just going to be normal.
That's right.
Their new normal.
And guys, I hate to say this. We have to go out to break, and I know we've kept Larry a little longer. He was going to have to cut out on us a little earlier. So, Larry, before we go to break, why don't you let people know where they can find out more about you and your work and what you do?
Well, I have a very great social media presence, Facebook. I don't do the Twitter thing. I haven't really kind of grasped that yet, but Facebook, I'm all over Facebook. My personal website is www.larryflaxman.com. My paranormal group is www.rpass.org. My joint page with Marie is www.paraexplorers.com. And I think that's about it.
All right.
Oh, Instagram. I do Instagram, too. Very
all right.
Rarely,
I bet you your daughter put you up to that, right? Because my son tried to get me on that.
She did, actually, yeah. She did the Instagram.
See, our kids are influencing our behavior now.
Well, yeah, Larry, thanks for being with us here tonight. Folks, the book is Mind Games. I was going to say Mind Control, Mind Games.
Ladies and gentlemen, the book is Mind Wars. I apologize.
Mind Wars.
Alzheimer's. Larry, it's been fantastic.
It's only Alzheimer's.
On the show, sir. Thank you so much. It's always insightful listening to you.
And Marie, if you can hold on with us, we'll chat with you a little bit. Larry, thanks for being here. We'll catch up a little bit more later. Folks, this is Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. We're here on the Intrepid Radio program right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. You stand by. We'll be right back. Sit tight.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find anyplace else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills and to ensure proper placement. Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
In a world that has become increasingly aware of the benefits of organic and natural ingredients, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is in the tea business simply for the love of the tea. Utilizing ingredients grown all around the world, blended with all natural organic herbs, fruits, and spices. Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is supremely conscious of the benefits of natural ingredients and the health benefits that modern science has proven and tea drinkers have experienced for centuries. Offering a wide variety of natural teas including black, white, pu'er, oolong, spice, wellness, and specially packaged iced tea blends, Cedar Lake Reflections Tea is both conscientious and passionate as they strive to provide you with the finest tea and herbs available for the ultimate tea drinking experience. Go to CedarLakeReflections.com to find affordable, high-quality, organic loose-leaf teas and tisanes and celebrate one of life's simple pleasures.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's what this is all about, sticking our fingers into the hole of the dike of humanity. John, how's your finger over there?
Sweating.
I'll oh, my bet. And Marie. So, this is interesting stuff, and I think it's pertinent to us all because of the politics that are going on today. Now, I know that you had mentioned all of this stuff, and we talked about this at the very beginning before we even had you guys on, about the diversion, the diversionary tactic, if you will. Tactic implies deliberate. That is going on with all these things that we see in the news nowadays about political correctness, about, again, about flags and about bra
silliness,
colors.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Silliness. They're silly. Absolutely things that need to be addressed because they get brought up. You can't ignore them, but how do you... would you say that these kinds of things are the things that are... They aren't used to monitor us so much, but they are used to distract us from, do you think, from the fact that we are being watched, that we
actually,
are being...
Actually, Scotty, I think you hit it. I think they're monitoring as well. Here's my opinion, and this is why social networking has become such a powerful entity. What it allows is for whoever, whether it's the government, the military, a corporation, or a number of corporations, it allows them to not just keep us occupied with BS and who Taylor Swift is dating and, you know, why white pants shouldn't be worn after Labor Day and your flag is bad and mine, you know, that kind of crap. But it's right. Also, I feel very strongly to monitor the responses, the reactions, and the behaviors. I was talking to somebody the other day about UFO disclosure, and I know that's a hot, you know, we could talk about that for 3 days. But one of the things that we were talking about is that maybe the reason why disclosure hasn't occurred yet in that sort of direct in your face way where you have, you know, an aliens landing on the White House lawn is because they, the powers that be, know that it would be total anarchy, total. So if you trickle disclosure out, if you do it slowly, you can monitor the public. You can monitor anger, fear, rage, you know, paranoia. So I think that especially with social networking, it is one big social engineering experiment. And that is not tinfoil hat because Facebook has indeed conducted social engineering experiments.
Oh, sure they have. We know it.
So, yeah, exactly. So think what's a better way to gauge whether or not the public is able to react or respond the way you want them to than to throw a little bit of, you know,
Marie, may I jump in there?
Absolutely.
And just ask you a question there. When you talk about distraction and the public, do you ever add into that the various classes within the public genre? And then what I mean by that is that distraction, and you talked about this earlier when Larry was still on, in the middle segment there, when you talked about distraction and keeping us away from what's really happening in the world. And I touched upon this with Scotty at the very beginning of the program. And it seems to me that the information that's out there is very, very demographic. The distractions are very, very demographic.
Right. They're pinpointed to certain groups.
They are indeed. And yet the news that we should be watching, or the articles or the information that we should be listening to and reacting to, isn't so much hidden. It's just put behind a glass screen, and it's only seen by those who can see it.
Who go look for it. I hate to say that, but you have to have an awareness that it's there to go look for it. And I just think most people aren't aware that it's there. And that doesn't mean that they're stupid or idiots. It just means they haven't been made aware yet. That's one of the reasons why we write this book and you guys have your radio show. It's to kind of get people aware that, you know what, there's some man behind that curtain and ain't Oz.
Well, that's right. And now, folks, we want to make you aware, because we're right up to the end of the show here right now in just a couple of minutes. Okay, yeah, it went by very fast. And we held that last break out for a little bit, so it just seems like we're jumping right from break to end of show. But the book is Mind Wars. It's subtitled, Who's Been Watching You from the Shadows? And so you're going to want to get this book. This is going to, I think, cover a lot of these questions that you have. And Marie, we've got about, roughly 3 minutes to the end of show, 2.5 minutes. Give people a little, your best tease on the book in 10 seconds, and where people can find you.
People can find the book anywhere, and I think they're going to be surprised by how objective it is and how much material we packed in. It's not just about government mind control. It's about domestic and foreign surveillance. It's about social engineering and programming. It's about cults. And there's a big section about the ways that in interpersonal relationships, mind control behaviors, we use the same techniques. I think it's really just to make people aware. It's not a book that's going to scare people. It's going to make them aware.
All right. And where can people find out more about you?
As Larry said, paraexplorers.com. MarieDJones.com is my website. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, Marie D. Jones Author, and LinkedIn, and I forget the rest, but I'm pretty much
there's so many of them.
You're in the Google directory, Marie.
I'm in there somewhere.
Yeah, just Google Marie D. Jones. You know, and I'm the same way. I've got, like, I don't know how many different Facebooks with groups and pages and all the different social medias. It's become crazy.
It is, but writing is such an isolated job that, for me, sometimes that's my way of socializing. So.
Oh, understandable. And, somebody just said to me just this morning that I was having a conversation with, they said, Facebook and social media has become the new society.
The new coffee shop. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Although I still prefer to see people in person. I really
Well,
do.
So do I.
But you can.
Well, Marie, I don't miss it.
I don't.
What?
Well, people usually they smell and they dress
my.
And so forth.
Well,
don't, and
they have people. I should have said I'd like to see select people in person.
And
the
they
rest
don't.
Of them, you're right.
And most men don't know how to tie a decent cravat.
Well, they don't. They lack etiquette.
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, yes.
It's
yes,
so
yes they definitely lack etiquette.
Yeah.
Well, Marie.
Facebook, too.
Yeah. Thank you for being with us. And
you're welcome.
Folks, we want to thank you for listening to us again tonight, putting up with our palaver at times, and also our good stuff, our good juju. And John, I think it's about time that you say goodnight to everyone.
Good night, darlings. Watching over during sun.
this is to end in fire. Then we shall all burn together. Watch the flames climb high into the night, calling out, Father, oh, stand by and we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. High. And if we should die tonight, we should all die together. Raise a glass of wine for the last time, calling out, Father, oh, prepare as we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky.